Namo Buddha, Namo Dhamma, Namo Sangha. Namo Buddha, Namo Dhamma, Namo Sangha. Namo Buddha, Namo Dhamma, Namo Sangha. It is yet another full day of practice. I don't know if you also lost track of time in between and the retreat. I did, but now it has come back. And so I will try to round up the many teachings that we have shared and try to make sense of them for you and finish some of your questions that are pending. First of all, I would like to explain you a little bit more about how we meditated this morning. Of course, you remembered. Well, the visualization of the Buddha, I think that was quite clear, with the kind of light sphere of the Buddha. You can give him this human shape, like the Buddha sitting here, the same shape, but it's actually just light, and it is giving us a bridge to pass over and to feel the qualities of awakening. So the bridge is to visualize, to be in the presence, then perhaps to let the Buddha dissolve into us in form of light, and then to sit with a stimulated awareness that, yes, this Buddha nature is very active in this mind, this stream of being. But what we did then is, you noticed I went through with you again through the five aspects. The spacious aspect, the central part of the lotus, and then we walked through to the front petal with the unhindered appearances. We went to the equal taste, the equanimity. We went then to appreciating the diversity of the vividness, the clarity, and then we went into the activity aspect as you were leaving the hall into your asana practice or tai chi or whatever you were doing. And actually, the way I was guiding you was integrating yet another aspect of the Buddha Dharma into this practice. Some of you might have studied enough to know the five skandhas, the five khandhas in Pali. Remember, that was the answer of the Buddha to whether an I, a self, exists or not. And he said, well, you cannot say it doesn't exist or it exists. It's more like this heap over there. And this heap over there, this pile of wood, where each piece of wood, actually, then you can take apart, you can take the fibers away, so each of them is again composed. So what the Buddha called a self actually is this working of these five aspects of mind, the working of perceiving forms, to experience sensations, agreeable, disagreeable, neutral, to differentiate, to have formations arising, that means reactions to what we live, our resonance expressing itself in wholesome states of mind and unwholesome movements in mind. And this creates different states of consciousness, which is the coming together of the six sense fields in one experience of now. So these five skandhas were actually present today in the guided meditation. And since I believe that you don't have them so present in your mind, then I tell you a little bit how they are present in the meditation, because then you can link the four petals and the center of the lotus, you can link it to the purification of the skandhas, which is yet another form. But I'm not going to make a structure with you. I don't want you to go into now the scheme of it all, but I want to help you discover that it is an incredible way of understanding the world, how the mind works, and how the same processes can be processes of samsara or the processes in an awakened mind. It would be convenient to start this time with the front petal. You know, the front petal, the mirror-like awareness, the water, yes, the representing coherence, fluidity. This refers to the first skandha of perceiving forms. So usually our perceiving or in the senses, including the mental sense, perceiving the forms of sight, the forms of smell, the forms of hearing, all of that is called forms. It's not only the visual sense. Form, rupa here in Sanskrit and Pali, means all the objects of the senses. And what usually happens in the confused perception of forms is that so often when a perception arises, there is a clinging to it. And the strongest form of clinging, of fixation, is anger. Okay, but there's clinging all the time. A sound, and while we try to find out what the sound is, the rest of the world disappears. A sight, you know, distracted. We go with the sight and we run into the next pillar. Yes, and like this, we have a thought in mind, we fix on what is arising, and we don't listen to the person that is talking to us anymore, because we call this distraction, but it's not distraction, actually, it is attraction. We are attracted, we are clinging to something that takes a greater part of our consciousness, of our awareness, so that very little is left for the rest of our experience. And then, because so little is left for the rest, then we make mistakes, because too much clinging to one. Now, in the terms of music, we would just say, well, this is a staccato life. Staccato, you know, is like strong sounds, following each other like a step dance. Yeah, but it's like staccato is the opposite of a continuendo, of a continuous flow of sounds. Now, a grasping mind lives a staccato life. A grasping mind is not grasping all the time to one thing. It grasps, and then, of course, it lets go, and then it grasps on the next thing. And then it lets go and grasps on the next thing that is happening. And like this, that is also in a samsaric mind, that is a letting go, obviously. I mean, we have all been grasping all our life, and we have nevertheless had a continuity of experience. It's like the music is continuing, it hasn't stopped. But the kind of music that we are hearing is more like a staccato. It's like moments of clinging following each other. Now, when the perception of forms, the first skandha, works without clinging, there is this fluidity, there is this continuity. And although there is clear perception, there's not the narrowing in of the perception. So we learn to perceive precisely without that narrowing. And that is the unhindered fluidity, continuity that we are talking about as the result of a deep letting go concerning perceiving forms. The forms, the appearances of the senses, the objects of the senses, they flow unhindered like in a mirror, because in a mirror, there's no hanging on to what appears in the mirror. There's not the it's a fluid movement, and this is an image of how Buddha mind is, how a non-clinging mind works. So this we call the purification of the first skanda, and it is this mirror-like awareness, this unhindered awareness. And then we move into the second skanda. We go to the petal on the east, the so-called earth element, but it's actually the purification of the sensations, of the feelings. Now, what happens when we have these feeling tones of agreeable and disagreeable arising? We differentiate. I like, I don't like. All the time comparing, or it doesn't interest me. So we compare from the point of view of an eye, and it actually we differentiate the world in better and worse. What I like is better, what I don't like is worse. And so it's like this up, this down, and this away. Yes, like, and this is the same mechanism as pride. This better, not only me, but also my family, my belief system, my, you know, whatever. So this up, and the other, which is not giving such an agreeable sensation, like the neighbors or the people I share the place with, down. Yes? Less important, not so agreeable, just very bothersome to hear their emotions and so on. So agreeable, disagreeable, agreeable, disagreeable, or come on, leave me alone. Yes? So pushing it out without caring. It's the third reaction. And when this skanda becomes purified, there is no more identification with feeling tones. Actually, the judging of sensations as being disagreeable or agreeable stops. We were talking about it yesterday when we were discussing pain, or when I was talking to you about pain, that actually to a non-grasping awareness, the judgment of something to be not good, not wanted, disappears. And somehow, in order to make your life possible with a lot of pain, one has to stop that judging. Only then it becomes possible. But imagine you also do that with the agreeable. Yes, you feel the taste. There is the taste to this food, but there's not the grasping that you must have more of that. Yes, there are nice sounds, but there's not the grasping that you want only them, or the grasping to silence and then the aversion to sounds. All of this is actually hanging on, grasping on to feeling tones. This means to how the sensations are experienced. And the Buddha, seeing that all what we call agreeable and disagreeable is not built in the sensation. It's they are by themselves, they're really strictly neutral. They're just conditioned by the world, loud sounds, small sounds, silence, just conditioned appearances, nothing inbuilt which makes this agreeable or disagreeable. It's all point of views, solidification. I give you an example that works for me very well. And now I like very much to be caressed or massaged. Yes, very much. But if my partner, if she caresses me on the same place for 15 minutes, the same agreeable sensation that was there before, it disappears. And I say, oh, maybe stop now or change place or something. You know, the same, it hasn't changed. The same sensation turns from agreeable into disagreeable because a change of mind has occurred. A kind of getting used to it, and now I want something fresh, and you know, this whole. And this is, it's like that. You have a most beautiful music, just play it longer than you normally. Play it all the time. It is not beautiful, it is not judged as beautiful anymore. Can you please turn that off? I know Mozart is very nice, but please, please. Yes, I know Keith Jarrett, very nice, but please leave it, yes? And whatever, yes, the Beatles were nice in their time, but please don't always play it. Or whatever rock group you have, heavy metal or whatever, it's all. Everything reaches its limit. There is nothing inbuilt in the sensations, okay? And this, now, from the Buddha's point of view, since there is a constant seeing of the nature of appearances to have no inbuilt character of agreeable and disagreeable, or better and worse, these judgments don't arise. And there is a direct view of the equal nature of those appearances. Equal in the sense they all pass, they have no substance, and no inbuilt feeling tones. So seeing the equality of phenomena, the equal nature, that is this unshakable equanimity in the mind of the awakened person. And that's, at the same time, of course, also the purification of pride, because seeing through the empty nature of the selfing processes, then no clinging to these processes if ever they arise, and no clinging to the selfing processes of others, just also realizing everyone to be of the same nature again. Huh? Equality, seeing the equality, living it, gives rise to that equanimity. Okay, the next petal. We are on our journey. We come to the so-called Western petal, which is the purification of desire, and is this differentiating awareness. Of course, distinctions, differentiations, are very much part of our life. Following our perceptions and the sensations connected to them, agreeable, disagreeable, our interest goes to what we like and dislike, and we begin to make very fine distinctions between what I like even a little bit better than that and than that. We make our hierarchies. We make our hierarchies of disliking as well. Not so cool, and then, no, I really can't stand him or her, and then, no, enemy. Yes, like, we have these distinctions, and we have distinctions, other forms of distinctions, due to other experiences that we know, this is the sun, that's the moon, that's, these are clouds, and so on, so we have knowledge distinctions. And we attach a lot of importance to this knowledge. Actually, it's another one of the fortresses. So, one of the distinctions is the emotional distinctions in our world. We attach a lot of importance to that because this is how we make our life with friends and all the others, those who are close and those who are far, important, not so important. For example, No, I don't go into more examples. And then we have the intellectual distinctions. Intellectual distinctions are learning, what we have learned from life. So what I know, what I possess as knowledge is nearer and clearer to me and becomes a support for identification. And what I don't know, what I cannot distinguish, is like bothersome. It's like, you know, I don't even want to think of all of that, what I don't know. I better stay with what I know, and there I'm clear about. Yes, so distinctions with corresponding identifications. And already you see I bring in this this little fear of the unknown. And this was the description of the third skanda. And now what happens in the mind of a meditator? Not giving so much importance to the labeling. Stepping out of friends and enemies categories. Not seeing everything just with the eyes of our own biography. Not giving so much importance to learning the knowledge that we have learned, but opening up to what we don't know, and actually being able to live the fullness of life without immediately using categories. For me, in my student years, I was very interested in botanics. So I classified flowers, I went around and I classified the flowers in a certain place, and I went back the next year at the same time to see how the vegetation has developed. I was doing descriptions of plants for the botanical gardens in Freiburg, you know, the medical properties and so on. Came a time when I couldn't walk around seeing flowers without my categories popping up. Now I'm in splendid ignorance. The categories do pop up only occasionally, but I have forgotten them. But I can see the flower for what it is, just, you know, not needing to categorize. I can feel also, we can feel a human being without having to fit it into categories. We don't immediately have to categorize man and woman, old, medium age, young, countries, nationalities, ethnic groups, religious belongings. How about just experiencing the person? Yes? So this is what the meditator learns. And the Buddha is always serving as an example of these qualities of not categorizing, not judging, developed to the top. Then the skanda of differentiating, of making distinctions, is purified. It is purified not from the capacity to make distinctions, but that all these distinctions are made from the point of view of a self. Because this is the, we make these distinctions in order to feel safe in the world. It's like a map for us. It's the orientation. And if you have the capacity to perceive forms, the objects of the senses, without falling into the judgment of agreeable and disagreeable, and not the immediate need to categorize, that means you can stay, you can open up to an experience of now, which is extremely vivid. Yes, the capacity to perceive is there just as before. So you experience an extremely vivid life without all the additional processes. These additional processes are called prapancha in Sanskrit, tripa in Tibetan. And this is the unnecessary thinking. All the unnecessary dualistic processes that are usually connected with sensations and distinctions. They all drop away. And thanks to that, we are not preoccupied with this unnecessary interpretation of reality. And reality, that means the experience that we have now, shines forth in an incredible precision and beauty. Without an impulse of the self needing to specify, needing to put categories. But if needed for the sake of communication, then all our categories of distinction are available. Words are distinctions, right? To be able to name something with a word is the third skanda, is the making distinctions, making differentiations. And to learn different languages is relying on knowledge of how these distinctions are made, these sound distinctions, in other people's mind. Okay, so the Buddha spoke different languages, different northern Indian languages. He was able to reply and to converse in them, to understand people. He was able to point to things and was very precise in the use of his words. But never with an identification, and very flexible. So you use one word, one distinction. It doesn't work for the person you are talking to. You change. No clinging. You change into the language, into the way the other person is seeing the world. You use the words of the child, you use the images of that person, you use the concepts of that person. So there is this incredible flexibility in using distinctions. Okay, so this is the basic process of the purified, you can say, now the third skanda, the petal of all differentiating awareness. The awareness still differentiates everything, but with the understanding of the empty nature, the equality of all phenomena, with the fluidity of not clinging to forms, because actually a distinction arising is then again a form, which is perceived. So that fluidity continues all the way along. And these sensations and these distinctions are already part of what we call the formations, the sanskara, yeah? The fourth skanda. So they are the beginning in the list of the 50, 51, 53 mental events that are called sanskara, a list which could be much longer, much more extended, but it's enough. The Buddha talked about these in his various discourses. And in this functioning of these roughly 50 mental events, there are five of these formative factors of the creative activity of mind, which are omnipresent, which are present in every act of cognition. Of course, they are also present in a Buddha's mind, but not linked to the idea of a self. Then there are five so-called object ascertaining activities, verifying what is that which my focus rests on. And here we have like the interest, we have the sati, the mindfulness, going all the way into samadhi, the capacity to really rest long time on the object until an understanding of that which the mind settles on arises. Of course, a Buddha has these capacities to settle long enough with any situation, to stay with it in an undistracted way, undistracted sati, to understand what is going on. But no reference to a self, no judging, no need to jump into categories before they are needed. Yes, all of that in a completely open, non-clinging awareness. And then we have in our normal way of describing the sanskaras, we have in the Mahayana Abhidharma, the lists are slightly different. We have the 11 wholesome factors followed by the 6 unwholesome root kleshas, the unwholesome root factors, and then 20 more unwholesome factors, and then 4 variable forms. All of them actually are our reactions to what our attention has dealt with. So these sanskaras, the wholesome ones as well as the unwholesome ones, they show to what conclusions we have come by, for example, looking long enough at a man on whom my gaze lands, and then my sensations, distinctions have arisen, and then I have a resonance to that in wholesome and unwholesome states in my mind. Now, this whole process, of course, in an awakened mind, is not searching for happiness. A Buddha's way of perceiving is not a hidden search for more happiness. A Buddha's way of perceiving the world is already resting in that complete peace that we call samsara, nirvana. And when relating to the outer world that others might call samsara, then the perspective is not one of trying to understand in order to make the world better, but is actually seeing from a place of perfection. And all the activities in connection with the world are not driven by any need that needs to be fulfilled, any hope, any fear. All of these driving forces are not there, no ego-centeredness. Actually, it's the resonance of a mind that rests in perfection with the changing conditions of life around us, which create changing mental events in a Buddha's mind, but never with the slightest idea of a self in the center of those processes. So what comes into the Buddha's mind, whatever the mental formations are which are arising then, they cannot be called wholesome or unwholesome anymore. They are non-dual. They are non-dual mental formations arising without a subject that thinks that a separate object is perceived. Actually, they are movements of mind in this interdependence and the activity coming from that, because these sanskaras are where the karma is created. Yeah? Kara and karman are the same semantic root and means that which creates. So usually with our wholesome and unwholesome states, we create wholesome and unwholesome karma. But the activity, the karma of an awakened mind, because of not even being in distinctions of what is agreeable and disagreeable, wholesome and unwholesome, is naturally free of clinging to a self and will naturally always be wholesome, but wholesomeness without a center, without a clinging to a self. And that's the purification of the 4 skanda, right? The 4, which are the formative factors. And that's why we talk about an all-perfecting timeless awareness. It is perfecting every moment of interaction with the world. What is normally the place where samsara happens. And now, I am coming. Now I'm talking about the wind. Now it was the petal with the wind. Yes, the petal on the northern side. And then we still have one skanda left, one normal, you know, these are the mental states, the states of consciousness, which are the sum total of what we live in visual consciousness, hearing consciousness, tactile consciousness, and so on. All six fields. And actually, these six fields of experience, which combine to the experience of now, normally, they give rise to the idea, I am what I experience. What I experience now, this is what I am. This identification does not arise in a Buddha's mind. We are now going to the center. We are now going to space. This, whatever experience of now is present in an awakened mind, is always with that quality of spaciousness, which here means without center and without limits. Because all the states of consciousness that arise are free from a subject as the center, and without any limitations, where one would say, over there is the object, or over there, somewhere, are the limits of love, compassion, you know, all the inherent qualities. So this is the purification of the fifth skanda, which refers to the center of the petal. Okay, this was, you went to school now, you went to university for a little more than half an hour, yes? But I did it on purpose with you so that you understand better what Mahamudra is doing. Mahamudra is the practice of going from the confused working of these mental processes, of these so-called five skandhas, to an awakened working of the same mental processes. No need to leave the mind, only freeing the mind from that constant clinging to an imagined self. And then that purifies all these processes. And what we do in shamatha practice is already calming down these habitual patterns of zooming into perceptions and forgetting the rest, differentiating an agreeable and disagreeable and so on, blocking out and getting fixed. We calm that down. Not using so much labeling, not referring constantly to past, present and future and so on, these differentiations due to time and experience and knowledge. Calming that down. Not entering the emotional struggle, not entering the wish to do good and to avoid the unwholesome, the bad, you know. Calm down, don't get so involved. And to treat every state of consciousness with a sense of relaxation, a sense of non-identification. So this is already in shamatha. Shamatha, in that sense, is reducing the power of the identification and all these realms of experience. And it is extremely helpful, okay? Extremely necessary. And because the trouble is reduced, we see more clearly. Things become more calm, the experiences of life become a little bit more calm, and we begin to understand better what is happening, just because we don't always create a storm in a teacup. Yes, this is what actually the shamatha practice is about. If you don't always stir up the water, you let it settle, it calms down, and the water becomes clear, you can see better. And that's what we do in shamatha. And the seeing is the vipassana. Seeing how it is the vipassana. Okay, so this is what Mahamudra is doing. Mahamudra is saying, basically, we have this beautiful mind that could be the working of pure, these pure skandhas, the way a Buddha mind works, That's basically our potential. However, we have to relax the clinging. We have to really get out of complicating the show so much. It still is a show, but a good one. I hope some part of you, some aspect of your mind can appreciate to have once in a lifetime received this instruction, because it gives you a real clue, an idea, a precise idea what we are actually working on. Now imagine I would have started on the first day with that. Yes. And you know, it's difficult enough to receive this explanation with a relaxed mind at the end of a retreat, but don't need to. Oh yes, this is fine. You take the 2 weeks to see that you're not getting too much to do when you come home, and you reflect and you digest. It is not the end of what can be said about these fives. It's not the end. But please, this is just to give you an idea that there is a deeper harmony in life. There is already a harmony in samsara. And more so when the clinging relaxes, you see the harmony and life as this, wow, these beautiful principles that actually structure our experience. This for me is the most important. And to give you a little trust that the Dharma knows what it is talking about. So for us, wherever we can bring in a little bit of relaxation, wherever we can reduce the clinging, it will be beneficial in this direction. We don't even have to know which skanda we are working on. We don't need to know which petal we are dancing on, because probably we are dancing in the whole lotus. They cannot really be separated, these aspects. They are not five different wisdoms, they are one wisdom. They are one basic state of ignorance. You don't have to know all of these classifications. Just helpful to get an orientation, that's all. Let's finish with a little meditation. Sunam deyintam jesim panintam nenem pedanam panjena Kengana jimbalam dumbayi simpenso ledo vado vashu Jampem pavujitakyam padam kantu sampodayanti shinte Teda kunji jesuda lob jenge vandi datam jedam tu Sangye kusum nepejen lamdan Chene mindhu dempejen lamdan Gendun mejedem pejen lamjin Jitang o waman lamdum pan